The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon in the sunshine, partial sunshine anyway, 64 degrees. Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt again today. And during this time of COVID-19, we've been taking this hour for the past several weeks to take a look at the health aspects of COVID-19, and County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us again. Dr. Bob, good afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to go a lot of different directions today, but let's start out, as we have been of recent days, taking a look at COVID-19 from kind of an in-depth look at stats from the world, the U.S., the state, and locally. And let's start with sort of the worldwide picture. What are you seeing right now in the data?
Well, the worldwide picture shows that this is still a very active pandemic, with now over 7 million cases and 400,000 deaths. It took us 3 months to get the first millionth case, but only 10 days to get from the 6 millionth to the 7 millionth case. And so this is really expanding, and expanding quickly. Actually, of the last week, 5 of the highest days ever were in the last week. And Brazil is just really blowing up. Lots of cases, lots of deaths. And what we're concerned about now is the president in Brazil has said they're not going to share their data anymore, so we're just going to have to guess. But it does appear that it's very active in Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, and Mexico. And the hemisphere shares things as people cross borders, and we're really concerned about this coming to the U.S. from the southern border. In addition, really still active in Russia and very active in India. India has relaxed some of its restrictions just at the time they're having their most new cases ever. And so India, because it is such a densely populated country, was really a worrisome place. In the U.S., the disease continues to be strong. We have 2 million cases and 112,000 deaths. These 2 million cases, we're adding about 20,000 new cases a day, and we've been doing that for about the last 6 weeks. So it's really not slowed down in the rest of the country. And it pops up in one place and then pops up in another. And we're just really having a hard time getting this under control. In general, the number of deaths is down, which is a good thing. But that's likely because we're finding more mild cases, but we're still not finding that many. You know, with 112,000 deaths and 2 million cases, we still have a death percentage of 5.5%, suggesting we're not nearly finding all the cases we should be. In Oregon, you know, we were very quiet about 10 days ago with a really decreased number of cases. But again, Oregon has had a real uptick in cases in the last week, so that 3 of the last 5 days have had a record number of cases. In fact, yesterday we had a record number of cases, and that's largely due to a few big outbreaks, one at Oregon State Penitentiary, one at some packing plants up in the Portland area, and now most recently in a plant in Newport that does seafood. Douglas County remains very quiet, still with 29 cases, only 3 active cases. We have 2 in the hospital, but only 1 for COVID. So we can't really break those out any better. And we've had very few new cases here. We're still waiting and getting ready. And we do know that there are some seasonal workers coming to town in the next few weeks to pick blueberries and help out with grapes. And so we're well aware of that.
So you mentioned when talking about the world, Brazil and some of those places. Do you feel like, because of the healthcare infrastructure that exists or perhaps doesn't exist in a place like that, that they were not as ready to deal with a situation like this?
Yes. So in many third world countries, they're very much less available to do it. So, for example, when you look at some of the third world countries, they have only a handful of ventilators in the entire country. They don't have widespread testing facilities, and they don't have widespread protective equipment. So poorer countries, mostly third world countries, are going to be really in trouble if they get big outbreaks of this disease.
And what about Russia and India? What can you tell us more about both of those locations?
Well, India is a very populous, very densely packed country that has some parts of it that really look like the U.S., very first world, but then some places that are just desperately poor. And in the places that are desperately poor, it seems to be the places that this disease spreads the most. So people who look at the epidemiologists of this say that rich people bring it from country to country, and then poor people spread it once it gets in the country. And that's basically what we've seen in every country.
When we talk about the idea of social distancing, we kind of have our own picture of how it, you know, what you have to do in Roseburg. But then you think about some of the countries you've mentioned, I think of India in particular, where you'd have incredible dense populations. I mean, if you think about back up 6 months and maybe a picture you would see out on the street in New Delhi, cars, people, everything, you know, it's pretty tightly packed.
It is very tightly packed. And in many of these places, you know, if we think of the average U.S. house of being 1,000 to 2,000 square feet with a few people in it, imagine now a whole house of 300 or 400 square feet with a dozen people, and almost impossible to maintain distance. And then the buses and the trains that are so very crowded are really problematic for spread.
It's ironic for all the call in recent years, especially in bigger cities, for public transportation. I know a number of folks that I know in the Portland area that would normally take it because it's convenient, it's easier, they can get other things done while they're on light rail or whatever. And now a lot of folks are wanting to drive their cars instead.
And I think this could be one of the terrible problems, is that as people abandon public transport because of the fear they're going to crowd the roads. However, that may be counteracted by the fact that more people may be able to telework.
And what about as well in some of these developing countries? I think about what I've seen in a few places where you don't have good sanitation, you know, get very rural. You don't have good sanitation. You don't have clean water, things like that. Even in perfect times, if you want to call any time a perfect time, but near perfect times, I guess, people's immune systems are not very good. They're more susceptible to a lot of other things just for the lack of clean water. And a situation like this has got to just exacerbate that.
Well, this will tremendously be a problem in countries that don't have the basic infrastructure, because without the basic infrastructure, you still have lots of other diseases to deal with. So when we look, for example, in Africa, they still have thousands of deaths every day to think about diarrhea, measles. And so they're still dealing with those other diseases. COVID is going to be just a real problem in those areas.
Interesting. And of course, around the U.S., I was trying to explain this to somebody over the weekend. I don't remember which setting it was, because I was in a number of conversations virtually for different things that I was working on. But I was telling them what I'd heard from folks who I am aware of in places like New York City or New Jersey, who talk about multiple family members and all of that being impacted, perhaps passing away. Some folks talking about going to many funerals or virtual funerals in some cases. And here, one of the lower attack states and one of the lower attack counties in one of the lower attack states, it's probably hard for us to get a picture of what this is like in a lot of other locales.
Yeah, we are one of the least affected places in the world. When we look at the rate of positive antibody tests in Southern Oregon, it's very, very low. And so it is hard for us to imagine that. But I have lots of relatives that still live in New York, and it sounds terrible of the number of people in nursing homes that are dying. So it is hard for us to understand that. I think we need to be grateful, though, that we do have such a low rate of such attack rate.
Any new things that you're seeing that health professionals, doctors, people that are working on this are learning about COVID-19?
Well, we learn new things every day. I think the two big new things in the last few weeks have been the role of super spreaders. So when we think of most diseases, you spread it to a few people, and that's it. In this disease, there are a lot of people who don't spread it to anyone else. In fact, we have a number of cases here where one person in the family has it, nobody else in the family gets it. And then there are other very well-documented cases where one person can give it to 50 or more other people. And so this super spreader phenomenon is really quite uncommon. The second thing that's really quite different about this disease is that it doesn't start out as a respiratory disease. And in young, healthy people, they seem to get this respiratory disease and just get over it. But in people with underlying health conditions and older people, it starts to spread and now become a vascular disease with lots of clotting and lots of other changes in the vasculature. And that seems to be the really deadly part of COVID.
You had mentioned several weeks ago, and I don't remember the term, but something that was going on with young people and different reaction to that, different sort of impact from being around, being exposed to COVID-19.
Yeah, so young people don't seem to spread it very much. Now that they've reopened schools in places like Denmark and in Hong Kong and Taiwan, they notice that there's not a lot of spread in elementary schools or even in high schools. There does seem to be spread as people in their 20s and 30s, but not that much spread in the younger people. And that may be one of the reasons why this disease is so less of a problem for young people other than this inflammatory disease.
And there was also, and I wish I could remember what the term was, there was something else involved there where it was just sort of shocking symptoms for some young people.
Yeah, so this is it's called multi-system inflammatory disease, and it is a disease that seems to follow COVID rather than being right at the time that you have the acute disease. And it's been noted in Italy, in the UK, in the US, a few weeks past the peak of adult disease. And what we're thinking this is the kids' really tremendously active immune system that are reacting to something a few weeks later from this virus. It's been bad with really a terrible severity, with kids winding up in the ICU and a number of deaths. However, most of the kids who do survive seem to be well.
All right, going to take a break. More when we come back on Talking Health, County Public Health. I'm Bob Dannenhofer with us. As always, the interview podcast after 5 at 541radio.com. Talking Health, Kyle Bailey, 419 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Afternoon 421, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us this afternoon. In the past few days, you mentioned it a bit in the first segment, we've seen outbreaks at the Lincoln County Seafood Plant, at ag plants in Hood River County, and in particular, the Lincoln County outbreaks, 61 cases reported today, 61 reported yesterday. That is a big concern when you see the numbers go up that quickly in one very limited space.
Yeah, that is very concerning. So I think we've seen huge outbreaks throughout the country, and those outbreaks have frequently been in food packing plants, agricultural plants, and in prisons. And indeed, Oregon has had outbreaks in every one of those. And what we worry about is that they spread quickly in those areas. They tend to be relatively young workers, so there's not a lot of bad disease in those areas. But then those people go home, and they can spread it to others. Or if they are a super spreader, they can spread it to lots of people. So we do worry about this, especially now that we have some reopening in Oregon.
And for the cases that we've seen here in the past week or so, there were also some in a couple of Portland area facilities as well, tied to agriculture. Oregon Health Authority has been monitoring those apparently a little bit more closely now. Sounds like they're doing some pretty direct work with the companies involved.
Yes, I believe that the OHA is doing lots of work with these companies. Now, many of these companies have work lines and whatever that are very difficult to go ahead and to make perfectly safe. You know, these people are working typically on lines where they're close together for long hours in cool, damp environments, all things that we think help to spread this disease. And so we are taking these very, very seriously.
And when we get a spike like this, obviously it runs the numbers up if you're looking at that. But for these folks, when they go home, especially if they've been asymptomatic and they don't realize they've had it yet, there's some definite potential issues there.
Absolutely. And so that we think, especially in these plants, there are going to be a good number of people who are asymptomatic, maybe 30 or 40%. So they have absolutely no symptoms, yet they can still be contagious. They can bring it to others. And some of them, especially if they're pre-symptomatic, meaning that they're about to develop symptoms, may be the most contagious.
Interesting. Now, for these locations, we're going to see more of this during the summer in terms of the agricultural aspects. And as you mentioned, some of these jobs that need to be done are the type that would be very hard to do in a more socially distant setting like we might do in an office or even a retail store.
Sure. So there's, in retail stores, ways to go ahead and separate flows, separate clients. Certainly you and I are telecommuting at this point. But how in the world do you do this if you are going to go ahead and do this in a meatpacking plant or do this in a seafood plant? So that's why we worry about those areas.
And obviously, I'm sure people are already working on, well, how do we change how these things look? But you're also dealing with manufacturing infrastructure that costs six and seven figures. And some, you know, sometimes it's not just a matter of adding a screen or some kind of protection. Probably, ultimately, some of this equipment up the road is going to look very different, but that's going to be a very long process.
That is going to be a very long process. You know, many of these factories are designed years in advance, and so to change assembly lines is going to be a really difficult thing to do.
Now, we're into phase two now. That began on Friday for Douglas County, a number of other counties. Some other counties came in over the weekend, and I think even one came in today. As folks are out there more, what are maybe some of the tips you would give them as things are opening up?
So things are opening up, and this will be good for the economy, although we do think this will likely increase the number of cases we're seeing. And so this increase in cases over the last few days is not totally unexpected. You remember when we talked several weeks ago, I said, well, when we started opening up on May 15th, you wouldn't see cases right away. Because even if you got exposed on the 15th, it would take 5 or 6 days to develop symptoms, a few days to recognize that this wasn't just your average cold, and then a few days to get a test and its results. So that would be 10 days later. And when you look here, it does appear that about 10 days after we opened, that this increase in cases happened. We're worried also now with phase two, as we have larger gatherings. Again, if one of these workers at the seafood plant, one of the workers at the ag plant, is it a gathering, say a funeral or a church gathering, that they could spread it to lots of people? So we have not let down our guard.
And I know as the phase two began Friday, for instance, when you talk about church gatherings, some folks weren't sure whether that was going to happen Friday or not. Some smaller churches that were ready for it moved forward and began to have additional services and do different things this past weekend. But some others that are larger are working to make sure they get everything set and, you know, have delayed reopening for another week or two just so they can make sure they get understand all of this correctly so they can keep the safe environment. And whatever type of gathering it is, there's a lot of responsibility from those holding the gatherings to do the best possible job they can.
Right. So for people who are going to have larger venues, there are lots of rules that we expect people to follow. And those would be, again, to limit the amount of potential spread. So we're very worried about, for example, long lines at the restrooms. We're also worried about people being crowded in as they're either entering or leaving. So these I think are going to be changes, and this may be the new normal.
Interesting. Well, I know for a lot of different things that folks are looking at right now, it is not an easy process. It's not as simple as saying on Friday morning, okay, you're in now, and suddenly you can be ready to do that. And for some folks, it's buying things, it's getting signs made, it's finding ways to manage traffic flow through a location, much like some of the smaller retail stores are doing. And we've even seen some of those who could have opened up earlier, but had opted not to. Some of the smaller retail stores that have been opening back up. I haven't been in any of those yet, but I understand in some places there's a whole lot of signs up to keep people tracking the way you want them to.
Exactly. And we do require in some areas that there are people who are monitoring the situation from the venue to be sure that there is no clogging up and no gathering and that people are adequately socially distanced. But we think with adequate social distancing that we can get back at least to a semblance of normal life.
You know, it's interesting. I just was drawing a picture of what that might look like. You are used to going to large venues, maybe in bigger cities in particular, but maybe a concert or something like that where you have security and you have people that are pointing and doing all those things. The nightclubs have bouncers. And essentially now we're going to have retail versions of not really bouncers, but just folks to be very specific about you go here, go that direction, turn there. And that is going to be very different for some people.
It will be very different. So I think being old enough, I can remember pre-9/11 and after 9/11. And before 9/11, you could just run onto the airplane at the last minute, and there wasn't that much security, and now there's quite a bit of security. It certainly takes time. It takes people. It makes the system a little less efficient, but, you know, we've gotten through. And I think we're going to see the same thing with COVID. I think some of the things that happened in the past are not going to happen anymore. You know, in the past, it used to be sort of a sign of honor to come to work when you're sick. I don't think so anymore. I think it used to be typical that people you didn't really know very well, you would hug or shake hands. I don't think we're going to see that anymore. And it used to be that that people could cough in an area and not cover their cough, and people would not be that upset. I think those are all going to change. And so just like things changed before 9/11 and after, and we got through it, things are going to change before COVID and after, and we'll get through it.
As people are open to doing more things now, you talked about some of those tips and some of those concerns. But if the number of cases does go up as you expect it will, one thing to keep in mind, too, though, is that the testing is in a much better situation in terms of being able to be tested than it was when we began all of this. All the resources are in place. So while nobody wants to see the numbers go up, it seems that we would be better prepared for them when and if they do.
And that's indeed correct. So the numbers may go up. One of the things we're really looking at is the amount of severe disease. And so that if you're not serious enough to be admitted to the hospital, it is a bother to have this illness, but it's not a big worry. But we are worried about people who are sick enough to be in the hospital, especially worried about people who are sick enough to be in the ICU, and very worried about people who are sick enough that they die. And so when we look at the numbers overall, the numbers are kind of interesting, but far more important than that is the number of hospitalizations, the number of deaths.
And politics aside, all these protests and demonstrations around the country where I've seen pictures, news coverage, I've seen a lot of people in some places wearing masks, but some not. But all of those folks around each other who don't know each other, boy, when you talk about trying to contact trace after somebody is tested positive, that is certainly, I would presume, a big concern.
So contact tracing after something like a demonstration is going to be impossible. And that's why we're worried about the spread at venues like now. Now, to the good, many people were wearing masks, and also to the good that most of these were outside. So that would decrease the risk of spread. But still, when you have that many people packed in a plaza yelling and shouting, we are really worried about this.
Well, and that's an aspect, too. The yelling, the spreading, when you do that, your mouth is more wide open, et cetera.
Yeah, so we certainly know that singing seems to be an issue, probably because you make more droplets as you sing and you take big deep breaths as you're singing. I think that's a lot like shouting. So we do very much worry about what's going to happen after these protests. Now, again, we're not going to see it right away. So let's say it was this past weekend that you got it. Take a 5 or 6 days to develop symptoms, another few days for you to recognize symptoms, and another few days for you to get positive tests. So we don't think we're going to see the first cases related to those protests until the middle of this week.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us, back with more, lots more information to cover on Talking Health COVID-19 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 436, 67 degrees. The afternoon report coming up with Douglas County's news team. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer joining us again today. Right ahead of the break, we talked about concerns about some of the large gatherings and other activities are taking place where people are so close together and trying to figure out what happens afterwards if somebody tested positive, and we're going to talk about COVID-19 contact tracing teams being expanded locally. Dr. Bob, what's going on? What's involved with that?
Well, we have a bunch of epidemiologists who work for us, and epidemiologists are professionals, usually masters of public health, who are trained in the methods of epidemiology. So it's finding a case, finding who you might have been in contact with, looking back through the infectious period, who you may have exposed it to, and then working to go ahead and try and stop the spread. So our epidemiologists are here, and we work on cases all year about E. coli and sexually transmitted infections and salmonella. And so we're good at that. With COVID, we're now also doing COVID. But because there are so many more COVID cases than any other cases, we're going to need to have a new team of people to help us. So we're thinking of them as epidemiology assistants. These are people to help our epidemiologists, to help the people either who have the disease to be sure that they can stay at home safely, and then the people that they may have been in contact with, so we can contact them so that they can stay home, so that they don't show up with the disease and spread it to others. And we know this strategy works, and so we are looking to just improve on the strategy and hopefully be able to get rid of this disease. Now, there are places that have done this very well. I think New Zealand has done this. And I think they said today that they are now free of COVID. And so New Zealand doesn't have anything special over us. And they were able to rid their country of COVID by just really working on it just exactly this way.
Now, a lot of folks, I think, thought going into this, because we were clearly in uncharted waters, that this would be a short-term situation. When you talk about hiring people, how long are you talking about needing some of these folks for?
Well, we think that we're going to need them until we either have a very effective therapeutic or an effective vaccine. And I think most people think this is it's probably a year away for either of those. So we think we're going to need them probably for the next year or so.
Wow. So what about the need, though, when we're in an area where the number of cases has been so low comparatively to many other locations?
Yeah. So, of course, we don't know what our numbers can be, right? Our numbers could really increase. So we're doing this based on population. And the state estimates that you're going to need about 15 or so per 100,000 population. So it would suggest we in Douglas County would need about 18 of these people to do it. Right now, we don't have nearly enough cases to keep 18 people busy, but we're helping out other counties that are really getting slammed. So, for example, Marion County is really getting slammed. They're having 10, 15 new cases every day, and so we've been helping them, and we may also help out Lincoln County.
So, obviously, then most or all of this work is essentially being done in either Zoom formats or on the phone then.
Yes, almost all of it is done on the phone. So these are really mostly phone calls to people. And it would be a phone call to you, for example, saying, ooh, we have somebody who's positive, and they said they had dinner with you during the time that they may have been contagious. And so you've probably been exposed. So we would encourage you then to stay home, and we would encourage you then also get a test a week or so after the exposure. And by doing that, in case you got infected, you wouldn't infect anybody else. And if you didn't have it, it would be unfortunate 2 weeks at home, but it would help to stop the spread of the disease.
So then are these pretty much work from home positions?
So some of these are going to be work from home positions. Some of these are going to be hands-on, because we know that when people are in quarantine, that they do need to have services. So a number of the people we've had in quarantine can't make their own meals or don't have their meals, so we bring in meals. Some of the people need other kinds of things, medications or whatever, and we've been delivering them to their houses or to the places they've been staying.
So then you talk about really being on the front lines. I mean, if you're going to be out there delivering food to somebody who needs to quarantine, there's always some risks there.
There are, but we're very safe in the way we do it. We usually have contact-free delivery. So I delivered some food last night to one of the people who were in quarantine and delivered it, laid it on a table, and they then picked it up. So we never were closer than 10 feet of each other outside. So the risk is really quite low.
And you talked about the epidemiologists. These are folks who are trained, have a degree, all of that. But the folks that you're talking about hiring, would they have to have the same qualifications?
No, they don't. In fact, we want people who are a couple of requirements. One is you're really good at talking and listening to people, because to find out, you know, what your contacts are and where you've been, you really need to be a very good listener. We also want people to be local people, so that, you know, this is not a kind of thing that will do well with a phone tree in India. This is people who, when they explain something, you'll get sort of a sense of what went on. So they said they had a frog burger. We want them to understand where they had their frog burger from, and know that then that could be a contact. We also want to be sure that we have people who speak different languages. So especially bilingual staff will be helpful. And we also want people who won't be freaked out by talking to people about illness.
So you really need to be a people person and somebody who's very sensitive.
Sensitive, a good listener, and we're really looking to hire locally. And these are reasonable wage jobs. So we think this is going to be a good opportunity for some people who may have gotten laid off in the last little bit. So the job postings are up on our Facebook page and our webpage. So I'd encourage people to go there and take a look.
And how soon are you trying to add some folks to your staff to do this?
Well, we've already added a few, but we're looking to finish the hiring this week and next. So time's wasted.
Wow. So an opportunity there. Certainly a lot of people have found themselves out of work in the short term, or maybe depending on where they are, maybe the place they've been working at expects to be at a lower capacity situation, et cetera. So not everybody's getting right back to work immediately. So a potential there. And for people who want to be able to really super serve and really help out their community as well, it would seem like this would be a good place.
This would be a great place to help out the community. You know, we don't think our contact tracers are going to be super busy, at least to start. And so we're hoping that this is a time to build other relationships with the community. And so it would be a great job. And, you know, I told people that you know, in my lifetime, there are a couple of events that are unforgettable. Certainly man landing on the moon, certainly 9/11, certainly the shooting at UCC were all deeply etched in my memory. And I think this is also going to be deeply etched in people's memory. And people will say, well, Dad, what were you doing during 9/11? Well, I didn't do very much. But during this pandemic, this is what I did. I kind of helped with the effort here. And there are other people who really do want to help.
All right. Again, you can go to Douglas Public Health Network, their Facebook page, to find out more about those opportunities. We've got one more topic and maybe a bit more to tackle when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. The interview, a podcast after 5 at 541radio.com. It's Talking Health, Kyle Bailey, in for Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
About 11 minutes to go. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us, our weekly in-depth look at a lot of health aspects of COVID-19, some of the response work of the Douglas Public Health Network, and we try to keep up to date with some of the topics that a lot of you have been asking about, and we wanted to allow plenty of time for this segment because this has been a big one on social media in the past 48 hours, really since Friday, but especially has really kicked off today. And that has been the issue of the governor allowing college football and other teams to begin training, et cetera, to play this fall. Some of that starting soon. Some of it will be a bit further down the road. But also the state guidelines appear to be saying no to things like football, soccer, maybe some other sports for high school and younger. That has brought a lot of controversy, some moves from folks down in Jackson County, one of the commissioners there, starting an effort to gather signatures. And it's really gotten the attention of a lot of parents all over Oregon who say, well, if the college football teams can play, why can't high school play? Things like that. Now, we're not going to ask Dr. Dannenhofer to totally solve this issue. But let's explain sort of the health aspects of this. He is one of the advisors to the governor in this area. Talk about why there is a higher level of concern for people that are still under adult age.
Well, I think there's concern for everyone who is going to be in athletics, and especially with contact sports. Now, there are some athletics that we think people can and should do perfectly well. So I think running, exercising outdoors, activities like that are perfectly safe to do. It's when we get contact sports, when you get close to within just a few feet of each other, and we still haven't exactly figured out how that's going to work. So in phase two for sports, contact sports are not allowed, but training leading to sports probably is. So in football, there's a lot of non-contact training that goes on in the first few weeks anyway. That can certainly go on. And in soccer, kicking the ball back and forth and doing running exercise could certainly be done. I don't think we've seen the last of the sports recommendations. I was involved with several of the groups who were putting these together. And I think there's still a little bit of discomfort. So some of the big football schools have started now to open up. So Alabama, I understand, opened up and 5 of the 50 players were positive. Well, that's not so great, right? Because these guys, if they're playing and tackling each other and whatever, could very well spread it to each other. And so I think we're very nervous about what will happen. Now, we do think that if football players get this, they're usually young and just quite healthy. So we don't think it's going to spread that much. Well, we don't think that the team members themselves will get that sick, but they may go home to elderly parents. They may be a caregiver for somebody else who's ill, and we do worry about that kind of spread. So I think people should just keep their powder dry now. I don't think anybody's thinking that we were going to do contact sports in June anyway, and I think we really need to see how this goes. If we start to see lots of cases and lots of problems in other places in the country, then I think we have to reconsider. But I think if we do things slowly, if we do things cautiously, and it works out okay, I think we can go back and have a perfectly nice fall season. Now, we may not have big crowds on the stand, but we may be able to do it in a way where it's still pretty enjoyable.
It's interesting, and of course, for a lot of, like a lot of other things in life, for sports, there's a lot of planning. You have the actual season where you play whatever the sport is, but you've got all this conditioning and practicing ahead of time. Also ahead of time is logistics, where you're working on schedules as to who plays who where and who goes where. And so folks are trying to plan, put these things together and feel like they're very much up in the air right now.
And they are very much up in the air. I mean, one of the big concerns about bus travel, right? So that when Roseburg plays a team up in the Portland area, that's 6 hours on the bus. And it's pretty hard to social distance on a bus. So how are you going to deal with that? So, the people few people standing on the sidelines don't bother me so much as what do you do when 40 guys on the bus. A bus are exactly the places where we've had lots of spread. So this is a very fascinating story about people on a trip in Nepal and basically everybody on the bus getting infected from one infected person. So those are the kinds of details that we worry about. Actually, they're running in the field here. If you've got a bunch of cross-country runners running in the field, I don't really care. But if now 25 of them get back on the bus, that is a high-risk situation.
And especially for young adults, we'll call high school students there, they're not over 18 in many cases. But for instance, as adults, you could tell people to, and this is incredibly energy efficient, inefficient, to, for instance, drive their own vehicle to a play in Eugene. But then you get a whole bunch of other issues if you start telling high schoolers that they've got to drive their own car to their sports activity that's an hour away.
That's exactly right. And as well as the dangers of teenagers driving, you do worry about that. You do worry about all of those issues. So this is why I would hope that people would just sort of chill for a little bit, and then we'll sort of sort our way through this. Because I think of those issues. I mean, think of asking all of these teens to drive to Portland for a game. That would not be so great either. But on the other hand, if you say we're going to get buses where people could socially distance, you'd have to send maybe 6 or 8 buses along the way. And again, that's going to be very hard to do. So I don't think we know the answer to that. There's so many issues about school that I think we're going to be figuring out. Now, the good news is that there are other places in the world that are ahead of us. So New Zealand's ahead of us. Taiwan's ahead of us. Korea's ahead of us. And they've all done it. We can find what worked well for them and what did not.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that you just start looking at this more and more and you think about all the issues, the transportation, even the tight quarters of a locker room.
Well, the tight quarters of a locker room has been addressed in the governor's orders, but it says basically you need to have adequate social distancing and at least 30 square feet per person. Well, for many locker rooms, that means that only a small portion of the team can get dressed at any one time. And so there's so many issues that go on this. I wish I was smart enough to sort them all out.
Well, and I suppose one of those things, if you had something that was going to take place and had been approved, et cetera, because I've seen this in other areas where essentially you need to show up to the school, to wherever you're practicing, ready to do that. So essentially you don't need the locker room and not taking a shower, for instance, until you get home.
And that may be one of the ways that we do it. So there's all kinds of new ways where people who are very creative are going to do great in this pandemic. People who are stuck to their own ways, are really going to struggle.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about that in coming days as folks try to figure out how to balance this. And, you know, which sports. Now, for instance, you talked about soccer with kicking a ball around. But under the current guidance that the city of Roseburg is going with in the parks, soccer isn't something that's being allowed now. So it sounds like you're saying this is going to be kind of an evolving thing even within phase two.
I believe it will evolve within phase two, right? Because phase two now doesn't really talk very much about sports and schools. So I think it will evolve. But I think it's going to be, I think it's going to work out.
And one of the other things there too has been, when I think about some of the things that the major sports have talked about, ways to cut down travel, is maybe you don't, if you get a sport where you can play, maybe you aren't playing anybody in Portland regardless. Maybe you're playing folks, you know, much more closer to your region. Now, given that's hard for people here where the area is spread out, it certainly would be hard for a place like Burns where there's nobody else around. But things like that. So a lot of work sounds like it's going to be ahead on this.
So there may be creative ways to do it. So, for example, volleyball is a concern because it's typically played indoors on a small court. But perhaps we would decide that if we're going to do volleyball, we'll do this outdoors, which would decrease the risk of transmission tremendously. That's a very different game, indoors and outdoors, but it's still a game. Maybe we would decide locally what we'll do is to do football only within the county. And although Roseburg is big, you might have several smaller Roseburg teams playing against the other teams, and that would be different, but still really quite enjoyable.
depending on how long we stay in phase two, if the data warrants, do you think it's likely the governor, the Oregon Health Authority, et cetera, will relax or adjust some of the numbers, some of the formulas for all these different things that are under phase two guidelines?
So the big concern is when CDC put out these guidelines for phase one, phase two, and phase three, the distance between phase one and phase two is not big. The distance between phase two and phase three is enormous. Right? So to get to phase three, you have to have either an effective vaccine or an effective therapeutic. We think that's going to be many months away. So I think it's not unlikely that you could see a 2.1, 2.2, which would have further relaxation as we understand better about where we should go.
And then the key to being able to do that means following social distancing and all these guidelines extra closely right now.
Yeah, right now is the time that I would certainly encourage people to redouble their efforts to be good at social distancing, to stay home when you're sick, to wash your hands, and when you're out and can't maintain social distancing, to wear a face covering.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, we're spending time identifying some of the issues that are coming up regarding COVID-19 and trying to give you the latest, most factual information here on Talking Health. Looks like we're about out of time for today. And Dr. Bob, are you back on Facebook tonight?
We'll be there at 6 o'clock answering questions.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Great. Thank you.
4:59, the afternoon report coming up at 5 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.